NPR's Alex Chadwick is about to set off on another of his National Geographic radio expeditions. First, though, he's got some background on a controversial meeting this weekend in Santiago, Chile, that could affect the fate of one of the world's best-loved animals.
160 nations belong to the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, CITES. And it determines the fate of some of those species, especially charismatic creatures like elephants. And they may dominate the CITES meeting beginning Sunday in Santiago. Some southern African countries, Botswana, Namibia, South Africa, Zimbabwe, want to end a key elephant protection. Dr. Holly Dublin, head of the African Elephant Specialists Group for the World Conservation Union.
The four together represent a very, very significant proportion of Africa's known elephant populations, and they are in a situation where elephants are dying natural deaths, elephants are removed through management actions, and they are accumulating ivory, which is all from legal source within their countries.
13 years ago, CITES banned trade in ivory because poachers were slaughtering African elephants. It worked. The legal market for ivory practically disappeared. Elephant populations began to recover. But now, some countries may have more elephants than they can keep. They want to sell stocks of ivory and use proceeds for conservation. Most conservation organizations are almost desperately eager for good relations with these countries, but they are against this idea. Holly Dublin.
The general view is that if there is any legal trade, it stimulates or allows for further illegal trade.
Poachers know ivory is hard to trace. They'd shoot elephants anywhere, especially in countries that are too poor or war-torn to stop them, and traders would get that ivory into the market. Holly Dublin recognizes this danger. Still, she's sympathetic to the countries that do want to sell.
The fact of the matter is that one cannot treat the African elephant as if it is one animal and that no matter where it lives, it has the same conservation status. There is illegal killing of elephants with or without legal trade. And this is because the killing is demand-driven. And that killing will continue as long as there is a demand.
What you really see here, she says, is globalization and the complications of interconnectedness. The very trade that might relieve one country's overpopulation could eliminate most of the elephants in other countries, and so a dilemma for everyone. The elephant issue is complicated because no one has a very good idea how many of them exist. There are probably 300,000 to 400,000 savanna elephants. They live on the mostly open plains and are fairly easy to count. Forest elephants are another species. They live in the forest. They're less abundant, but they're very hard to count. Now, conservation scientists based at Cornell are trying out a new idea called the Elephant Listening Project. And for that story, we're going to Central Africa. If you check, the State Department is discouraging travel to the Central African Republic right now, political unrest. There are often travel warnings here. Too bad. It's one of the sweetest places I've ever heard. Logging roads are still scarce. Away from them, you can hardly tell if you've wandered into some vast, prehistoric grove of giants, great trees reaching overhead to close off the sky. You travel here on foot, following elephant trails. But in the dense forests on the northern edge of the Congo Basin, even a creature as large as an elephant is difficult to see. On this radio expedition, we're with an elephant researcher who is looking for the right tree.
What kind of a place are you looking for?
So I'm looking for a tree that has a bifurcation, a crotch, about 20-25 feet up. So we can throw a line over it and hoist it up.
Dr. Chris Clark of Cornell University's Laboratory of Ornithology, where he's director of the Bioacoustics Research Project. He's a 50-ish scientist who looks more like a defrocked Boy Scout right now. A mop haircut, unshaven for several days, a large bowie knife at the belt of his shorts, an old button-down shirt, retired from more formal occasions. The sleeves rolled above his forearms might help later against ants. When he gets a good tree, he's going to climb.
And then I've got to get into an opening and get the GPS working, because right now I can't get any satellites.
There's nothing prehistoric about the gear we're packing. Hard drive recorders, microphones, satellite locators, all to test a new idea, the Elephant Listening Project. Sound is crucial to these creatures. Maybe researchers can use it. We find a likely tree. Chris Clark scrambles up the trunk. We use a rope to form a sling for an acoustic recording unit, an ARU.
I just put a line around that. All the way there. Point to that.
What is this thing, 40 pounds?
Now, this was several months ago. Chris was too intent on his task to explain all the details then, but he added them later on from his lab at Cornell, where they developed the ARUs.
They're essentially a little tape recorder in a small box that can run for weeks and months, in this case, continuously, night and day.
Computer hard drives turned into digital recorders with car batteries for power, rugged in a wooden housing, but small enough to Velcro to a tree. And it'll record every elephant call it hears for months.
Once we get back to the laboratory, we can unravel what's on that recording. And to do that, we have software that listens specifically for elephant sounds, and we count how often and at what time and how loud all the different elephant sounds are on that recording. These pieces of information are really critical for us to be able to make an estimate of how many elephants there are and over what area we're monitoring for them in these dense forests.
An array of forest ARUs to harvest for data could become a powerful tool for elephant conservation and really for discovering many things. Chris Clark first worked on these devices to explore the undersea world.
We can not only listen for elephants, we can listen for endangered primates. We can listen for frogs and birds. We can listen for insects. All the natural world is available to you with this technology. You just have to be able to climb the tree and survive that really rugged environment where you need to make the census happen.
We packed tools and started back to rendezvous with the scientist who thought up the Elephant Listening Project. Her name is Katie Payne.
If we could find a relationship between the patterns of calling of these elephants, maybe we could make some sort of model from that that could be applied in forests where elephants are only heard but never seen.
To do that, she's going to have to develop the other component of her project, an elephant dictionary. That story tomorrow, as this radio expedition continues. This is Alex Chadwick in the Zanga Sanga Dense Forest Reserve, Central African Republic.
Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR News and the National Geographic Society. Maps, pictures of some of the elephants are at npr.org.